Hey listeners, is your morning cup of coffee tasting a little less flavorful than you expected? The secret to a great cup is starting with fresh beans, and at Joe Bean Roasters, they roast and ship daily, so you get super fresh coffee every single time. If you want to level up your morning routine, check out their new Guide to Brewing Better Coffee at Home, which covers everything from grind size to water quality. You can get cheap shipping straight to your door or choose convenient local pickup at Joe Bean or at Peppermint. Head to JoeBeanRoasters.com and use the promo code LUNCHADOR10 at checkout for 10% off your order. Thanks to Joe Bean for sponsoring the Lunchador Podcast Network.
Our Voices Project acknowledges and honors that the lands we live, love, grow, work, and learn on are the ancestral homelands of the people of the Onondaga, or the Seneca, one of the six nations of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, along with the Cayuga, who call themselves the Gayukono, the Onondaga, who call themselves the Onondaga, the Oneida, who call themselves Oneidica, the Mohawk, who call themselves Genegahaga, and the Tuscarora, who call themselves Garure. We acknowledge that our society was founded upon exclusions and erasures of many indigenous peoples through centuries of genocide and forced separation from family, culture, language, and from land, spirit, and mind. We acknowledge this violent history of seizure and displacement that allows us to be on this land not only as a recognition, but as a motivation for change. As filmmakers, we are committed to working to dismantle the ongoing legacies of settler colonialism through truth-telling. We invite you to join us in enacting justice by taking such steps as committing to making a recurring monthly donation to a Native-led organization, such as to Ganondagon State Historic Site in Victor, New York, and or Native Made in Rochester, New York. Visit these organizations and find out how you can volunteer your time and help support Native-led initiatives. Find out how Indigenous peoples are represented in your local school district's curricula and advocate for the historical truth-telling of ancestral land dispossession and genocide and the acknowledgement and celebration of Indigenous contributions, past and present. Learn about the Murdered and Missing Indigenous Women movement, created to advocate for the end of violence against Native women and to bring awareness to the high rates of disappearances and murders of Native people, particularly women and girls. Learn how you can help. Help work towards truth, healing, and justice for the Indian boarding school impacts by contributing to the National Native American Boarding School Healing Coalition.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Representation in Cinema. Our Voices Project is a production company committed to providing a safe space and platform for Black, Brown, and Indigenous peoples to share experiences while dismantling destructive stereotypes perpetuated in the media through visual storytelling and truth-telling. On this podcast, we talk about the many ways in which Black, Brown, and Indigenous peoples are portrayed in films. We address the things that we love seeing, the tropes and stereotypes that Hollywood continues to perpetuate on screen, and what representation we'd like to see moving forward. Hello, Pod. Welcome to the final week of Arab American Heritage Month. I'm your host, Jackie McGriff. And if this is your first time listening to the podcast, welcome to Representation in Cinema, a podcast where we talk about the films that center Black, Brown, Indigenous voices, as well as on the film industry itself. I'm not only your host, but I'm also the founder, director, and co-producer of Our Voices Project, a production company that shares the stories and lived experiences of Black, Brown, Indigenous peoples through visual storytelling and truth-telling. We are community-engaged filmmakers who firmly believe that you can't center the stories of Black, Brown, Indigenous peoples without being in community and in solidarity with them. If you're watching this on YouTube, hit that subscribe button and make sure you hit the little bell to get notified about new episodes when they drop. If you're listening to the podcast on your preferred platform, make sure that you go ahead and hit subscribe. And then if you also like tonight's episode, be sure to rate us 5 stars and then leave us a comment letting us know exactly what you loved about tonight's episode. Speaking of tonight's episode, we're discussing the kind of representation we want to see and talking about the films, filmmakers, and production companies that are changing the way that we see how Arabs are depicted on the big screen. If you haven't already tuned into our previous episodes, where we'll break down where we've broken down the film Real Bad Arabs and the destructive stereotypes we've seen throughout Hollywood's history, as well as define a few terms that we've used throughout this series, we highly recommend that you go back and listen to those episodes. Now, before we get into the conversation, we have a few returning guests as well as some newcomers into the podcast. First up is Amira Ferjani. Amira is a Tunisian-American and marketing and communications specialist who uses her platform to educate others on anti-Swana discrimination and the often erased diversity of the Southwest Asia and North Africa region. She draws on her lived experience and cultural heritage to challenge the erasure and misrepresentation of Swana peoples in media policy and everyday language. Welcome back to the podcast, Amira.
Hello, excited to be back.
Next up is Muna Najib. Muna is a first-generation Palestinian social justice activist, writer, educator, and speaker. She believes in fighting for full land back for all indigenous peoples, which includes Palestine's full liberation and sovereignty from the river to the sea. Welcome back, Muna.
Hello and salam, everyone. Thank you for having me back. It's a pleasure.
Absolutely. And I also just have to commend Amira and Muna last time for taking over the podcast. I was joking with Amira actually on Threads that she should take over the podcast. I was only half joking. But y'all did a fantastic job. So thank you for that. It was an amazing episode. Could not wait to come back and actually listen to it. And it was absolutely amazing. So thank y'all for that. Next is Munir Atala. Munir is the head of production and acquisitions at Watermelon Pictures. Visit their website at watermelonpictures.com to learn more about the distribution and production company, whose mission it is to shift culture on a large scale by bringing Palestinian cinema and other untold stories to broad audiences in a way that entertains, inspires, and activates audiences. Welcome back to the podcast, Munir.
Thank you so much for having me, Jackie.
Yes. And next we have Ryan Schreim. Ryan Schreim is of Lebanese and Palestinian descent and is an actor, voiceover artist, writer, and producer in Los Angeles. Since having been a producer for the Arab American Comedy Festival in New York and the co-founder and producer of the Middle Eastern Comedy Festival in LA, Ryan has been using his platform to help combat stereotypes and misrepresentation of Arabs in Hollywood and the media at large. Ryan can be found on most socials at Ryan Schreim. Welcome back to the podcast, Ryan.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And joining us for the first time on the podcast are local students, Safa and Sada. Safa Tahoub is a Palestinian-American in her third year at the University of Rochester, studying brain and cognitive science with a minor in Spanish. Welcome to the podcast, Safa.
Hello. Happy to be here.
Yes, happy to have you. And last but certainly not least is Sada Al-Jatawi. Is a Palestinian American and a senior majoring in public health and nursing. Welcome to the podcast, Sada.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you for being here. Now, on to the conversation. So, since Safa and Sada are joining us for the first time on the podcast, we're going to ask you a couple of questions that we've had our other guests answer. So, starting with, what were the films that you grew up loving as a kid that really stuck with you throughout the years? And I'll start with Sada.
This isn't a film, but mm-hmm. it's a TV show series, mm-hmm. Avatar The Last Airbender. That was my favorite as a child and still is to this day. Yeah. And I think rewatching it as I get older, a lot of the moral themes in that show, especially for a children's show, were very on point. And I think it actually was a large part of how I developed my morals and values growing up as a kid. If you watch it again, but yeah, that was one of my favorites.
Nice. How about you, Sada?
It's a show about genocide.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And standing up to fascism. It's such a good one.
Yeah. It's a really good one.
With it. The sequels awesome. didn't do as well, especially politically.
Mm. Yeah, Legends of Korra was not my favorite. Yeah.
Safa?
I was going to say the same thing.
Are you serious?
Because I love
We didn't discuss
that
this
show.
Before.
I loved that show. It was for my older brother, my little sister. We all loved
watched this together.
Loved
yeah.
it.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Can I ask you guys how old? I tried to show it to my nephews and they just were not, they couldn't get into it. How old were you when you, I watched it in like my 20s or 30s. I don't remember. But how old were you guys when you watched it?
Like 7 or 8.
I think I must have started in elementary school. Yeah.
Okay.
But it was like my whole family, even my parents. Like that was the one show we could all agree on to watch.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So if you haven't already watched Avatar The Last Airbender, which also includes myself. Yeah. I'm at Toronto for real.
So good.
All right. So as we mentioned before, it's Arab American Heritage Month. So to our students, what comes to mind for you as far as there being a month where Arab cultures, identities, and lived experiences are acknowledged in America? And I'll start with Safa.
I think for me, the MENA region is very diverse. I mean, you have the Levant, you have mm-hmm. the Khalij, you have the Gulf, you have North African communities that identify with the Arab label. And so I think it's really important that we honor all those voices when it comes to this month as a whole.
Mm-hmm. And Sada?
I think for me, honestly, growing up, especially in the U.S., especially in Kansas, and then I moved here, being Arab is like something that was very much so erased because most people didn't know anything about the Middle East, didn't know anything about Palestine, which is where my family's from. And so when a couple of years ago, when this became a month to celebrate, I was like, oh, this is really nice that, you know, drawing awareness that we have a large Arab community that has been in the United States for decades now. But I think it definitely falls short in how, which is why we're here to talk about this today, but in how we're portrayed in the media and how it's talked about and how it's celebrated. Even though we are seeing improvements, I don't think it's doing enough given our current political reality, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was Muna, the last time we spoke about this, it was, so this month was started by, I think it was also Rashida Tlaib, right, who brought it up, but then it was Biden in 2021 who actually ended up reinstating.
That's crazy.
Maybe Rashida had something because she's in the administration. It was in the works in 2017, and there was the Arab America Foundation that finally helped finalize it with, under the Biden administration, 2 years before the genocide.
This is what I mean, like the hypocrisy DEI type things. Like, it's, they just like to talk, they don't like to do anything.
Let's make it look like we're doing something, we're not actually doing something. Okay, so for all, and I'm going to again start with our students, because this is what we're going to be talking about today, and then we'll like be diving further into it. But what does authentic representation look like to you? Sada, I'll start with you.
For me, I think authentic representation looks like films and media that comes from Arab creators and Arab authors, because I think when it's sourced in any other way, it just ends up being this orientalist, gentrified, or heavily stereotypical version of what Arabs are. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is rooted in stereotypes that, oh, we're violent people, we're backwards people, uncivilized, et cetera. Because I think that serves, again, the political agenda of this country or the Western world in general. Yeah. But I think good representation that's actually done by Arabs is, it feels like an act of love, because I love our culture and I love our people, and we have so much to celebrate and so much to be proud of and so much beauty in our various cultures. And like Safa said, it's so diverse. So then when it's represented accurately, it just feels like, oh, this is like coming home. This is like a slice of my home that's being shown back to me. And that's really important to have. And I think it's only recently that it started becoming something I can actually identify with, but it 100% was not before.
Wow. Safa?
Wow. I think authentic representation means to me honoring people's voices and their true stories, because like I've been saying, like Sada emphasized, is we are such a diverse community and all of our experiences are different. And I think that when you look at the Arab world, people have traveled so much that now like our experiences are expanding across the world. So you can't just look at one Arab experience and say that it's a representation of even one country, because we've been traveling so much, we've immigrated so much, and our experiences have changed and our thoughts have changed. So I think when you think of representing the people, you look at their stories and their family stories. Because when I look at my own family story, it has changed so much from Palestine to Syria to coming to the U.S. And my family is scattered all around the world. So when you look at representation, you have to look back at the stories of the actual people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Luna, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with both of you. We've already kind of talked more or less a lot about this in the past few episodes too. And I know between Ryan and Laith and Amira last time as well, I absolutely agree. It has to come from like a place of, first of all, loving our own cultures, our own peoples, you know, just being tired of accepting and being force-fed the false narratives and, you know, whatever the mainstream has allowed for so long to be, which unfortunately has done so much harm. And is not about, you know, I guess it's not really about connecting people. It's not about humanizing our people. That's like the very mm-hmm. last thing on the table. It's all about what policies have been put in place by our government in connection to Hollywood to villainize our people or to justify all of the, you know, occupations and colonialism and imperialism that's been happening for so long. So, you know, I think we're still trying to figure out what this idea of authentic representation means and like being allowed mm-hmm. and given the resources and the spaces and all of the things that are needed to get them out there and to make them actually happen, because we all have stories that absolutely we want to share, whether it's our personal stories, family stories, mm-hmm. whether we're dealing with politics or not. Mm-hmm. We're always so politicized. We can't get away from it. Mm-hmm. But it's about just having the opportunities that are needed in order to make these things happen. And there has been slow progress, but there's so much more mm-hmm. that can be done. And so much more that can, come about for us as well as like a wider audience.
Mm-hmm. Munir, how about you?
Yeah, it's such a difficult thing to sort of put your finger on. I love the answers that others gave. The students had such beautiful answers to that as well. And I think that it's one of those things where you know it when you see it, you know it when you feel it. It's hard to sort of quantify. It's hard to prescribe it. And that's what makes it so meaningful in a way. It's art. It's one of those kind of unknowable things that we chase after and aspire to, and has to have this kind of ingredient that nobody can really name before it exists suddenly and magically.
Yeah, thank you for that. Amira, how about you?
Yeah, I think speaking to that, especially the knowing it when you see it, hearing this question, had to think of The Voice of Henry Shaw, because that's what I just saw in theaters. And maybe I'm biased because the director is Tunisian as well. But that story was just so beautiful. You know, I was very, I don't know whether to say nervous about seeing it, because I knew that the story of Henry Shaw is just so hard and difficult to parse through. But the way the director and the story played out, like, there are moments that I laughed, and there are moments of levity, and the care that is put into telling that story of humanizing every single person, of giving a voice to him, giving a voice to her mother. It was just the most authentic thing I've seen, and something that I definitely haven't seen from any American movies I've watched. But then speaking to, the diaspora, we have such different experiences, even just from where we've come from and where we live in America, or where you may live if you're displaced in Syria, or if you're native Syrian. Like, we do have all these different experiences. And I think so authenticity is just letting us, to hearken Edward Said, you know, giving us the permission to narrate our own stories. And I think when that is done with care, it really shows through. And, you know, like, even a moment as small as Elmo saying Habibi, saying Salaam Alaikum, is something that can speak to us, because we want that. Like, there is such a thirst for us to be able to share our culture in a way that it's actually appreciated, and not in a way that is critical, and showing all of those different aspects. Like, I think that's where a lot of the misunderstanding comes from, is that at the end of the day, we're painted as this one monolithic thing, but we are so different, and we have different ideas, and we have different experiences. And so being able to show those in their full authenticity is where it's really lacking right now.
Yeah. How about you, Ryan?
All right. Well, stop me if I ramble. I have a, you know, there's a few things. First off, what everybody has said, I wholeheartedly agree with. I think I kind of see three different ways that we can better our representation. One, and, you know, Watermelon Pictures is also like right now, thankfully, you know, really championing this, like telling our stories by our writers and our storytellers, with our actors, with our voices, with our directors and producers, so that every, you know, at every angle, it's an authentic representation of us. I mean, it's hard to not be authentic when we're the ones telling the stories. The sort of other side, you know, like one thing that like really struck me was how, particularly in America, the Black community, when Black Panther came out, the joy and just the energy around that movie. It was a fictional movie. It was a superhero movie, but it was so affirming of like, look at what we could have been, could be, if the world had left us alone and let us shine, you know? And so, you know, even those sensationalized stories that show Arabs in a completely like different universe, like just celebrating what we could have been, what we could, you know, had the world left its hands off of our region. You know, like there's a Green Lantern. I don't know how familiar y'all are with Green Lantern, but there's a Lebanese Green Lantern who, like, it would be great, James Gunn, if you're listening to this, it would be great to see that character, you know, just the celebration of us for us. And kind of this leads into my third thing of like, most of us live lives that have nothing to do with our identity. We're doctors, we're lawyers, we're actors, we're writers. In general, in Hollywood, when they deal with Arab representation or Muslim representation, it's about being Arab. It's about being Muslim. It's not just like, oh, hey, here's this character. You know, like one of the things I love on The Pitt, for example, is you have a hijabi who's like, they don't even talk about her religion. She's just there, just like you would find in any hospital or any, you know. And so, like, I do think we can't expect John from Iowa to really write authentic Arab representation. But what we can ask for from these creators who aren't Arab is writing characters that just happen to be Arab or Muslim, or, you know, casting folks who happen to be Arab or Muslim or, you know, North African, or just, and letting us be humans like anybody else. And I think that goes a long way, because it's great to have unique representation, but for the majority of the American, particularly entertainment viewing public, they don't watch those, you know, Arab films, Palestinian films. They don't generally watch those. What they watch is what comes on streaming or right. TV or whatever. And so if we can see more representation of us in these regular TV shows that has nothing to do with our identity, and it's just like, oh, well, yeah, that's that North African woman on the show, and cool, she's just a character. So I think that's sort of like a three-pronged attack to better representation as a whole across entertainment and Hollywood media.
Well, thanks y'all for joining us today on the... No, I'm just kidding.
Sorry. Just
like, no, you're fine. You're good.
I'll get off my soapbox.
Can I just say something to thank you for sharing all of that, Ryan? The wheels are turning. Few things, like, I remember even during Black Panther, like the first time I saw it, and rest in peace to, you know, Chadwick Boseman. Yeah. When the little boy is speaking and he says, "Baba, tell me about this," mm-hmm. yeah. I felt so happy. No, I was like, this was the first time in a film, like, obviously they're not supposed to be Arab characters, but that were the Baba for mm-hmm. father, mm-hmm. which we use, which a lot of other cultures use, but just that word alone, I don't know why, but I felt so seen when he said that. And I was like, and for every little person in the room who could relate, I was just happy in that moment. Yeah. that they, I don't know. It was a very, thinking about it, I'm like, maybe it's not a big deal, but even just that little piece of humanity there made a big difference.
I think even like sometimes people say, oh, representation isn't important or it's not relevant or it's, it isn't what we should be focused on. But I think everyone longs to have what they watch or what they see be relatable to them in some way. Mm-hmm. And even you saying Baba reminded me of my Baba because he always will tell me that someone is actually like a quarter Arab or actually like, it didn't happen. Yeah. Like he'll be like, oh, like did you, Shakira's half Lebanese. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like yeah, yeah. Rihanna's actually Rihanna. And I'm like, no, I don't think that's right. Like that is 52. Like he just also wants some representation
out there.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Perfect. Yeah. No, that's the thing I think with especially like on the internet, there's a lot of course, there's always discourse, especially when it comes to representation. And I always, I'll go back and forth, but I always kind of go back to, well, I mean, if you were someone who has not been around a certain community and all you see on your television screen, all you see in the news, all you see on the big screen is this like horrible like representation like of that community, then maybe you're thinking in your head like, you know, you're someone who is like always trying to advocate for people or what have you, right? And just like treating everyone equally, you know, as it were, like you're still going to have, because you have seen all of this like representation, I'm using quotes for anyone who's listening, like you've seen all this representation, like what is to stop you from like believing, right, the justification to like enact certain policies, harmful policies, right, here on Turtle Island and also like abroad. You know, this is how you dehumanize a culture, a heritage, a whole people. So like whenever someone says something like, you know, representation doesn't matter, I'm like, but it does. Like, cause it's relating back to, again, how are all the different ways that you can dehumanize people? Media is one of them.
Or mess it up, right? Mess it up because and he brought up again, like the hijabi in the pit, mm-hmm. which I think I haven't watched I haven't watched the show, but as soon as you said that, I was like, okay, I know the character because I saw like a still of her. Have no idea what type of character that you know she plays, mm-hmm. or anything, but I'm like, oh, that's interesting, because they will always mess up the hijabi character. Always. She's doing crazy things that hijabis don't do. She's taking off the hijab, like that's not authentic representation, and they're doing it, I don't know, in a way to appeal to an American audience, I guess, to
a wide audience. Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
be real.
Yeah, and they also always equate Arabs with Muslims. And
yes,
there are Arab Christians, there are Jewish Arabs, there are Arabs of all religions. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing that is a big pet peeve of mine, is that they're not.
Right.
Where it's not all Arabs are Muslim, 100%. And that's another big problem in the media, too.
Yeah.
I was speaking a bit about this yesterday with MPAC. Like, again, I have nothing but respect for MPAC, which is the Muslim Public Affairs Council. But like, they're the only sort of advocacy group for Arabs in Hollywood. Like, there is no Arab advocacy group outside of the Muslim Public Affairs Council. Yeah. You know, and you're right. There's especially in America, there are a lot of non-Muslim Arabs. You know, my family was Roman Catholic. You know, there are a lot of us. And so I do think, you know, in the Western mind, Arab equals Muslim. And sure, there's a majority of Arabs are Muslim. But, you know, I mean, I think they're not going to know this stuff without our input, without our voices, and, you know, in the
writing
room.
It's also such an erasure of how diverse Muslims are, you know, like that most of them are Indonesian, from the Philippines, Malay, Somali, Sudanese. But yeah, sorry to interrupt you.
The character on the pit is actually Filipina. I thought that was nice. Yeah.
And also just an erasure of how diverse people practice their faith in general. Mm-hmm. Like people's relationship with religion or Islam is not also universal. And there's a lot of people mix in culture versus religion and a lot of stereotypes as well. So that's like a whole other can of worms. But
But
also, like, I think a theme that I'm hearing is like media really touches people. So like what's represented in the media is going to touch somebody in a very like unique personal way to them. And something that I've been thinking about from like our conversations is like something that really bothers me with representation of Palestine to begin with is like even with these new films coming up, I feel like we can't get away from the genocide label. I feel like we can't get away from the fact that like we're experiencing a genocide and we've been occupied for all these years and we're really experiencing something terrible, which is very true. And that awareness is very valuable still in media. But I just like the stories that I really value from like my uncle are like about the Olive festivals and like these really sweet stories of our culture that I really miss seeing in general. And I think even that representation in a way can be bad for people because we can't get away from that struggle of like our people, but we also,
the constant suffering.
We also need representation that is like our culture also in general.
This is definitely something I've thought about because we know that Black Americans suffer from much of the same thing where so many of the stories are 12 years a slave.
That's a whole other podcast episode.
This is definitely something that I thought about, like even just watching The Voice of Hinvershab and how beautiful it was. It's like, okay, is this all that I could hope for, that now it's, you know, telling a tale of suffering?
And I feel like especially when it comes to Arabs who are so resilient and genuinely our coping strategy is to laugh and it is to to make light of things and to just like tough it out, whether or not that's the healthiest thing. And so to see us represented always as like a group of people who are just continuously suffering, continuously going through occupation, war, violence, it feels like also such an injustice in a way because you know, they always see like say like Palestinians, we teach life, like we do. We genuinely do. Like our culture is so rich and it deserves to be portrayed in that way. And back to your point too, I remember especially before October 7th, I would tell people I'm Palestinian, they would be like, oh yeah, yeah. But they had no idea what that meant. And then after it was like because of everything in the media, the way they perceived me as a person completely changed. And that was a very weird experience, genuinely. But that just goes to show you how powerful the representation really is because these were people that I thought were my friends and then the way they saw me flipped like 180.
We can talk about that because you guys are the Gen Z, that was me after 9/11.
Oh yeah, there you go.
So same parallel.
Same
thing.
When folks constantly, I love that y'all also like, you all bring up great points and especially when it also has to do with like, when you are getting that representation, it's constantly seen as traumatic. Like, okay, what other narrative am I going to get? Am I going to be okay watching this? You know, and while like those things, of course, like are important when you're constantly getting inundated with that, right? We have like real life genocide like happening, like we're seeing on our screens like every single day. It's also like you're also getting that like on the big screen. So it's like it's constantly trauma and not any of the other things that make like that point to, you know, your heritage, what you love about your heritage, what you love about your culture, like all these different things, all kind of like these different aspects of life. Right. It's kind of like you said, like an injustice in a way, because it's like, okay, great, we got representation, but now it's all trauma. Like I can't also
celebrate. These boxes. We end up like just kind of falling into certain boxes over and over again. And sometimes maybe we do it unconscientiously to ourselves in some ways because we are trying to fight this juggernaut. This huge thing, which like, I don't know, by the grace of like something almighty, like seriously the past 3 years, you know, really quickly, because I would love to, I want to throw it to like, I want to talk about the encampments and all of that. I really do because like it's so horrible what has been happening. And yet, miraculous in a lot of ways, yeah. because I'm telling you, the shift in the narrative yeah. through the media, because of the Palestinians on the ground yeah, with 100%. Their phones, right. Has changed everything in mm-hmm. a short span of time yeah. in a way none of us could have anticipated. Could have foreseen. Mm-hmm. We could do a million movies trying to, like, you know, convince the West or whatever, like, what's true and what's not true. And unfortunately, like, people still, like, didn't wanted to look away and all of these things or ignore it. And the media still wanted to twist it. But because of social media and because mm-hmm. of the people on the ground, mm-hmm. there was no
denying.
There was no denying it anymore yep. at all. There was, it was just too.
They tried.
they continue to try.
Yes.
Yeah, they really do.
Yeah. And so, but to take it from that now to, like, how have people now been trying to take the reins from the largest student movement that has happened to date to, you know, people just out here using every piece of resistance that they can, you know, you know, I think like mm-hmm. The Encampments is absolutely one of those films that, like, showcases the student and is part of the resistance. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I just kind of wanted to just throw that out there.
Yes, no, for that. Sure. Yes, we can absolutely yeah. talk about The Encampments. Well, I mean, Sada, did you want to say more about what she was mentioning? At least about, like, yeah, The Encampments and resistance and...
I mean, while you were talking, I did just think, like, about, oh, putting ourselves in boxes. I think it's really difficult because, especially being in the diaspora, mm-hmm. the amount of guilt you feel, mm. especially, like, I have family in Gaza, and genuinely it's so hard to be present, to be like, okay, yes, we want to celebrate our culture. We want to talk about holistically who we are as people. But then at the same time, you just feel horribly guilty for enjoying anything
yeah.
when this is what your people are going through and you have so much privilege. I don't really think there's a right or wrong answer to it, which is something that I'm still trying to accept, but it's a very, very difficult balance. So I don't really blame anyone in that sense of how we're handling things. But in terms of The Encampments, like I said before we were live, that watching that movie after leading the encampment at the University of Rochester here, and Safa was there also throughout the whole journey, was like also a little re-traumatizing, but also insane, because I think in the heat of the moment, everyone felt really alone in their own little encampments. Like, we saw other students having encampments, but we didn't know exactly what was going on because it was just so chaotic. But watching the film and watching the way administration spoke to the students, the mm-hmm. way the media was spinning things, the way people came together, I was like, wow, they're using the same playbook. But also what's crazy is that we were so united and we didn't even know. Like, we were really holding it down all together throughout this country, and it was not a conscious thing. Mm-hmm. And it was something so beautiful to be a part of, honestly. It's one of my, like, favorite memories yeah. on campus, favorite memories in my life is being a part of that encampment. And I feel like it helped us really grow as hopefully future leaders who are going to continue this kind of work. But yeah, I would love to hear, it was
Munir,
yeah, talk about it, because
please.
Yeah, I would love that insight, because for me watching that, I was like, oh my gosh, like,
we showed it at the little, yes. by the way, we did show it here. We had one showing at our little theater, and the show, everyone showed out. Yeah. It was awesome.
It was packed. Yeah.
That's amazing. No, it's so inspiring to hear that. And yeah, I mean, what you guys were a part of was one of the largest student uprisings in history. And I think that sometimes we take that for granted, but that's an incredibly remarkable thing. And I think the film was an attempt to sort of plant that flag and say, for history, you know, not even for this moment, but for history, this happened and nothing will ever change that. And they can never take that from us. What people were able to mobilize, what students were able to mobilize, is so inspiring. And, you know, the ripple effect of that is still, you know, washing over the entire world and will continue to. And I think that the next phase of struggle, I know people are frustrated about what comes next. I don't know. I think the next phase of struggle will inevitably come. I think that's what the encampments showed, is that no matter what you throw at young people, they will always find a way to the truth. And being a small part of that production, you know, I was teaching at Columbia University that semester. I had just finished my MFA as I was a grad student there the previous semester. or two semesters previous. And when I saw the encampments forming, you know, I'm also part of the Palestinian youth movement, and we sort of, it was a funny position to be in as both a professor and an organizer. And I, you know, tried to maintain a respectful distance, but also just being on the encampments in the moments where it was open to the public was some of the most inspiring, like intoxicating kind of feelings ever, because it just felt like a new world was being born. And we wanted to sort of capture that in the film. We weren't even planning on making a film while the encampments was happening. And I'm so grateful for that, because it would have been so stressful to think about to approach it that way. And I know that there are productions that did try to approach it that way. And, you know, it's been tough. Like, I don't think anything has emerged that has fully, you know, been able to coalesce around a narrative or the moment in the same way that the encampments film did. And I think it was just kind of a fluke. We got oddly unlucky / lucky, however you want to look at it. Mahmoud, who's a dear friend and one of the protagonists of the film, was abducted by ICE. We sprung into action immediately, and with the blessing of his people, you know, his family, his lawyers, the students in the featured in the film, we said, you know, should we release this? Should we just get this out immediately? And people felt like yes. The unanimous like sort of feeling was that, although there may be risks, thankfully nobody got in trouble for the film, from what I know. Those risks were worth getting this narrative out there and fighting the battle against the Trump administration, who was calling Mahmoud Khalil all sorts of terrible and untrue things. So, yeah, I'm curious, where did you guys see the film when you saw it the first time?
I saw it at the screening. I cried. I was like,
oh yeah,
it was so emotional. One of the girls who went to Columbia, who was in the film for a brief moment, her parents, she's from Rochester, and her parents were there. Yeah. And they came up to me afterwards and they were like, that was our daughter who got arrested first. And I was like, yay! I'm so proud of her. I'm so proud of her.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Like, I'm so grateful for that movie, genuinely, because it's so difficult to describe to people what it was like being there in the moment and how we were being perceived by people who were very against what we were doing. And it's so deeply frustrating because you're not doing anything wrong at all.
Right.
But it's just the system around you that's really pushing for that. Like, I was banned from campus. Lafa thankfully hasn't gotten any conduct. Knock on wood. Inshallah, this doesn't happen. But and it was just, as someone who's always been a straight A student, very type A, getting in this much trouble was like, but I was like, I can't not do this.
Yeah.
It was intoxicating. Intoxicating is a great word for it.
The Level Up Coffee podcast is now dialed in.
We love coffee and stay connected to every development in the industry, both here in Rochester and worldwide, to bring you our unique perspective on the ever-changing world of coffee.
We're doing regular tastings, reporting on our travels, and trying to hold back tirades about the forces that make the coffee supply chain a neo-colonial mess. Join us on the Lunchador Podcast Network and wherever you get your podcasts, and stay
dialed in.
Can I just say, no, so it was, I don't know how you guys did it, Munira. Like, I'm getting like flashbacks of like when you guys were running behind students inside certain buildings and they were being chased, I think, by the police. And it was very action packed for sure. Yeah. And I don't know how you were able to, you know, get some of that footage, and including, I think you had a few people too that they interviewed incognito, giving information and things like that. And I was like, this is deep. Like, they really went there. And I was like, it was, it's definitely, it sticks with you for sure. And, and it was just like, you know, it was an exciting film, but also like, yeah, there isn't really a film like, not like that specifically about the student movement. I think that it really hit the nail on the head. And obviously it's, you know, Columbia was like the hotbed. And then like the ripple effect, like really around the world around it. So yeah, it's a great, great documentary. Yeah.
Thank you so much. And one of the things that I like took away from the film, like stepping back after having seen it a bunch of times while, you know, it was being released, is that it really is an indictment of the media and how out of literally thin air, they spun this narrative about the encampments, that they were discriminatory, that they were, you know, all the things that we know they accused the encampments of being. And there was zero evidence, you know, and all of our reporting and all of our coring through every minute of footage, every angle, every allegation, following it down, you know, just journalistically to see what is out there, really. There was not a single thing from inside the gates of the university that were even remotely, you know, offensive or, I guess, discriminatory. Yeah, people can be offended by a lot, but if you want to look at it objectively, nothing discriminatory. And yet there was this absolute frenzy, absolute circus around it all. And really, it's so shameful the way that the media has just gotten away with it. And I think it comes back to this question of representation, of authenticity, of who's narrating the story, what are they saying, and the power of that slander. So,
just to, you know, this is just sort of more of a general, as somebody who's been talking about this for 3 decades, I will say, you know, slowly being the older person in the rooms, seeing these encampments was such a, like, I was like, the kids are all right. Like, they got this. I mean, like, watch
your full chest on it, okay?
Like watching this like sea change and this movement, this like organic uprising was like, oh, I don't, this is like, there's a whole new generation taking this on that has power and has a voice and is using it. And, you know, it was like, it's been really, as horrific as it's been these last few years, it's also been like really beautiful to see the community like finally gaining traction and, you know, people hearing the message.
And I think that's what the encampments movie like portrayed, was that beautiful community that came together to stay on campus. And even we had a lot of community members support us during the encampments. That was really, really beautiful to see. So shout out to all of them. But yeah, the encampments was so beautiful. And as hard as it was mentally and emotionally, I think that just the beauty of it was so memorable and, again, intoxicating. It was just, beautiful experience.
And definitely a moment where I think everyone now can draw strength from that. Like that was like, okay, this is doable. Like genuinely, we had nothing. It was started with me and a friend. We went and we bought a bunch of tents from Walmart and we just decided we're going to do this too. And it ended up exploding into a huge thing. And we were like, okay. And that really taught me that in the future, there's always something you can do. There's always something you can create out of nothing. You just need the people to do it. And especially when it comes back to representation too, like throughout that past year and then the years since then, we've been fighting so much discrimination within the administration, and the way that it's just so believable to people that the Arab students on campus will be violent. The Arab students on campus will be the ones to instigate things, will be the discriminatory ones, will be the threatening ones. And it's like, that's genuinely their only reasoning they have to shut anything down. And it just shows you how much all this media portrayal has worked on people, because why is that an acceptable answer to anything?
Right.
How can you tell me that the Arabic that I'm wearing on my shirt, the kufi that I have, that automatically puts me in the box of, oh, you are threatening to people on this campus. Right. I'm 5'5" and my favorite color is pink. Tell me how I am a threat to anyone on this campus. Yeah. It never made sense.
Yeah. Or that your culture is something political.
Yeah.
I remember seeing at the graduation ceremonies, people wearing kufiyas and seeing videos of people ripping kufiyas off of students. Like, and there are people wear cultural flags. They wear, you know, special ribbons to celebrate, especially international students. It's just so... I think it was Munir who, when he was asked about Arab American Heritage Month, mentioned reckoning. And I think institutions and the way that they responded to student protest is something that we are going to be reckoning with for a long time, especially as the Trump administration has tied that to funding and, you know, rescinded degrees and things of that nature. It's something that we're going to need to undo. And it's just wild to me the rhetoric that was put out around that and how many arrests were made, how most of the violence that happened was in response to students being tear gassed, in response to police coming in. But yeah, I think that I do want to, it's such a good example because people don't, of course, we don't want to take away attention from the genocide, but a lot of Americans don't realize how much the genocide also affects our domestic policy. And the encampments were such a example of that because of how the media responded, administrations responded to, you know, putting out these anti-Semitism protections that are really just coded anti-Palestine, that you can't say Free Palestine, you can't say From the River to the Sea, you can't, you know, you have a Palestine sticker and all of a sudden you're a danger to Jewish students, even though a lot of Jewish students were also in those encampments and targeted by Zionists and things of that nature. So I just think that that's something important. It really shows how this genocide that people like to say is happening on the other side of the world is absolutely affecting Americans.
1,000%.
Yeah. If I can also just get in my kind of like geek out a little bit here, because when I'm hearing like everyone, and again, making amazing points as per usual, but also talking about like shifting the narrative and film like being this opportunity to like show what was really going on, showing the truth, getting to the truth of things, you know, when our press and other media like won't challenge, you know, those in authority, especially in this empire. I think film is a great way of doing that. And so like when you have a film like Encampments, the thing that I really couldn't, well, one of the things like that I really appreciated about that film was that there was this juxtaposition happening. So you would see the news clips, right, of, I forgot what his name, because it's not worth it. But in the news talking about little Gazas. But then you have, and then also talking about like you know, whatever it was that they were saying, you know, negatively about the encampments. Then you have clips showing students like holding like different like little like workshops. There's like they're holding Shabbat, they're playing soccer, they're doing homework together. There are professors coming and teaching classes like during the encampments. It's like you also have folks coming, which I know what I was also part of, like people from the community like delivering things to the encampments, making sure folks had like, you know, food and water and access like to all of these things. And so when you're seeing the juxtaposition between what the media is telling people and then what is actually happening on the grounds in the encampments, I think is a powerful thing. And that's just like me again, like kind of just like looking at the editing, looking at like the direction, looking at how like the film is structured and everything to make that point. It's like media is telling you one thing, but we're going to show you what's actually going on and what, you know, what these students, what this community is actually standing for. And then it also goes back to then, and then you're seeing and you're hearing from Bassan, who is on the ground, like in an interview, right, talking, and she's also referencing, you know, not only what is happening, right, but then also too, like with the encampments. And I'm also seeing on social media again, and this is outside of the movie, of course, but like you're seeing on social media as well, folks in Gaza referencing the encampments.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I also want to say on that note, us, we had so many community donations due to the encampment that we had. And afterwards, we had about $5,000 left over. I was able, my family that's in Gaza, I was able to, me and my mom were able to get them that cash through some guy. And they were able to build a well that has, and to this day, is getting water for like the whole neighborhood.
Oh, that's
in Rafah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And that was like so beautiful because it was such a direct connection of like how our efforts really not only emotionally impacted them, but was able to physically impact them as well.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. That's incredible. Oh, man. In terms of, does someone else have, at least virtually, thought I heard someone about to say something.
I know. I was just going to say shout out to all the students, who participated in any of the encampments, and also all the students who, broke the rules by carrying a flag, mentioning Palestine as they were trying to graduate, and they got punished for it. Mm-hmm. So, again, like Amira was saying, it's not to take away from what's happening, in Palestine on the ground or in Gaza. But it just goes to show you, like, systemically how this country, will vilify the innocent people over and over and over again just to, to meet their own goals and to keep the status quo going, in whatever case. It's, again, incredible. Yeah, an incredible part of history, and it's still very inspiring to think about.
Absolutely. Getting into, and you all reference it in some way, but this shift in the narrative of how folks are seeing Arabs, how they're seeing Muslim, how they're seeing Palestinians. I wanted to also get into, again, because Munir, you're not only a producer, you're also someone who, is head of production and acquisitions at Watermelon Pictures, and also to Ryan being an actor. Can either of you or both of you speak to either any project that you've either worked on or have been involved with where, you're not only seeing the kind of representation, in whatever definition that is for you, but also too is seeing where we're seeing these shifts in the way in which, Arabs are being represented, or at least the public perception. Munir, I can start with you.
Yeah, no, thank you for the question. Excitingly, you guys were talking about less traumatic portrayals, and we have an amazing rom-com coming up this summer. It's a Lebanese film. It's called A Sad and Beautiful World. It's so sweet. It's so heartfelt. It's hilarious. It doesn't, gloss over the realities of life in the region today, but that's not the central focus. It's really a wonderful, phenomenal love story. We've also got all sorts of projects like that in the works. A horror film, a sports movie, a reality TV series. So we're busy and we're cooking stuff up that you might not expect from Watermelon Pictures. But really excited to share when the time is right. And in the meantime, our platform has over 250 films that really span the gamut. And Voice of Hindrajab, which Amira was talking about, is one of them.
So, Ryan?
Personally, there are things I can't talk about that some of my friends are doing. I will say most of the change that I'm seeing as far as Hollywood and entertainment is concerned is coming from Arab creators. I spoke a little bit about this last episode. There's been a lot of it feels like backtracking in Hollywood. I feel like there's a push to sort of reclaim the narrative from some of the powers that be of wait, no, these are the bad guys. Just as far as the roles that have come to me and that I have turned down. So I do feel like there's a backlash to this sea change. For some of these, especially, I'm not going to call out any networks, but there are certain networks that seem to be a little bit more tied in with the administration than others, that sort of, push this anti-Arab propaganda. But I, you know, I have noticed my own friends are getting money to do their projects. Whereas before, finding money to do projects that painted Arabs in, you know, a great light was probably harder. So, you know, I'm noticing the sea change that way from the big studios and the networks. Not as much, but again, like I said, we all saw Superman, and Superman was very pro-Palestinian coded. Again, whether that was his intention or not, there seems to be a sort of subtle shift in these bigger projects, even if the more obvious things are pushing back.
Yeah. And then for the rest of our guests, I wanted to know, and Amira, I'll start with you. Where have you seen, this sort of like shift in the narrative?
Yeah, definitely. I think a large part of that being headed by Watermelon Pictures and movies like The Voice of Hind Rajab. And I think within our diaspora is where I'm seeing a huge shift of us. A lot of it, in part because of American Israel, our the SWANA identity has been so fractured. We've been, you know, infighting, I guess you could say, trying to declare who's the worst of us and that we're not that. Sometimes, you know, people who try to renounce their Arab heritage or their Muslim heritage to distance themselves from that identity. But within the work I've been doing, and especially with stuff like the student encampment movement, with the BDS movement, we're seeing a lot more solidarity. And that's something that I think and that I hope will continue to grow. There's, like I said, such a desire for it, for our culture to be spread, you know, seeing more people wearing the keffiyeh, seeing more people rejecting what mainstream media is putting out about us. Like, my heart gets fuzzy just seeing people use the SWANA acronym instead of, you know, reducing us to the Islamic world or the Arab world and things like that. People asking more questions and being more curious when before it was just such a taboo. It was such a rejection of our culture altogether. And now, I can't remember who said it. Maybe it was one of the Khalidis, but I know there's a quote that, like, they're speaking to Israelis and they're saying that, like, the reason we are so known is because you have tried so hard to erase us now. And so being able to reclaim, especially like we were saying earlier, of like spreading that joy, I think is so important because, unfortunately, Israelis have really stolen a lot of, especially Palestinian Arab culture. And so they kind of have stolen that joy almost. They get to sit there and claim the best parts of our culture and act like it's theirs while reducing Palestinians to the worst parts of it, you know, what they characterizes the worst parts of it. So being able to authentically share that, having those spaces, having people finally question that terrorism designation that is so callously thrown onto us, I think is where we will see that solidarity. And I, you know, I hope it can be similar to like when we helped out the Black Lives Matter movement as far as like protest movements go and everything, that we continue to build that solidarity, especially with Black Americans, with Indigenous Americans fighting for Turtle Island liberation. That's where I'm really seeing this show through, as we're given, or we're taking back that permission to narrate.
Absolutely. Safa, how about you?
What was the question?
So where have you seen the shift in like the narrative?
I think I would agree, especially within like the Arab community in general. I think, like, I even heard back home within my family, just say you're Arab, like, don't say you're Palestinian, because they don't know who we are. They're not going to understand what that means. I remember in my social studies course, we were learning about, like, where the countries were. And, of course, Israel is always where Palestine is. And I had this fight with a girl in my class about, like, because I asked the teacher, I was like, I'm going to say Palestine every time you tell me that that's Israel. And he was like, totally understand that. And one of the girls, every time I would say that out loud during class, she would like, look at me, like, what are you doing? But yeah, I think in general, just the momentum that we've gotten from the movement has increased our awareness so much that people now know Palestine as a term to begin with. Mm-hmm. Because Sada mentioned earlier in the podcast that like she would say Palestine, no one would know what that meant. But yeah, I just think it's like we can't have platforms like Watermelon Pictures like this unless we're talking about it and we're pushing it. I mean, this genocide has been the most awareness that we've gotten for an issue like this. I think like this is the first time it's ever been this in media like this. So yeah, I think just in people in general, like people are actually talking about it again. So
Sana?
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree. It's crazy how much has changed in the last 2 years, even just being on social media, and maybe it's my feed too, but like the amount of memes about hating on Israel was never a thing. A couple of years ago, like I was at the gym and I overheard these two white girls talking about like, oh, it's horrible what's happening in Lebanon. And like, I can't believe the genocide is still happening. And I was like, oh my God, like, this is crazy. This is crazy. So, and even talking to my parents, like my parents will say, we've never seen support for Palestinians or like awareness of like Arabs or the Swana region like this. Mm-hmm. And I think the point of solidarity is a huge point, because I felt that in the encampment and then even getting more involved in like activism, is that the amount of ways in which a lot of our struggles are interconnected and the amount of friendships, like genuine friendships I formed with people who can relate to like having a country that's being occupied, going through colonization, having like an immigrant experience, especially a lot of our Hispanic friends too. No one mentioned that, but a lot of our like Latino community too. A lot of solidarity in that. And I feel like that's really helped, because at the end of the day, if you see yourself in other people, you're going to want to fight for them too, because our freedom, our liberation is all interconnected at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But I think in media, like a lot of these films that we have on this list and everything didn't exist a couple of years ago. And that just, again, shows how much we've grown in the last couple of years. And it's sad that it's had to come at the expense of the well-being of our people. And I think that's something that I struggle to think about as well, because like I am someone who believes that everything happens for a reason, but it's like, it's horrible that this was the reason, and it's still not enough to stop what's happening. But it's a step in a positive-ish direction, I suppose.
So for our viewers and listeners, so the list that Sada's referencing, so we have like a list of like, we were trying to think through like movies and everything that were more so like multifaceted, like of Arabs. And so we've talked like throughout the series about shows like Mo, you know, and Rami, and then of course mentioning Watermelon Pictures, which of course we're going to continue to do. Y'all can go and subscribe to Watermelon Plus right now, available for less than what you pay for Netflix. Just saying. So I'm going to just keep doing that. So yeah. But films like Palestine 36, All That's Left of You, The Boys of Hijab, Foragers, which I also saw at the Little Theater. And someone had mentioned The Battle of Algiers.
Yes. That needs to be mentioned, by the way. Keep going, Jackie. It needs to be mentioned. Battle of the Top notch. Yeah.
Yes. So, and then, okay. So this is like a random one, because I'm trying to think through, and, you know, we're going through real bad Arabs, and, you know, we're looking at all the negative, and then I'm like, okay, where are the multifaceted, where are the complex, right? And so the one that I had come up with was The Old Guard. So, okay, so Gina Prince-Bythewood, who is a Black woman, she's the director. It came out, I'm trying to remember, like it came out like a few years ago. And I watched it recently. He is an actor he was born in the Netherlands, but he is of Tunisian descent. It's Marwan Kenzari. And so there's the film, at any rate, is about a covert group of tight-knit mercenaries with an inability to die who have fought to protect the world for centuries. But when their abilities are suddenly exposed, they need to eliminate the threat of those who seek to replicate their power. And so, like, in terms of, like, when I was thinking about, you know, representation and authenticity, it's like, it's not, I don't, it's not necessarily like a film that is focused so much on, because he's in a group. So it's not so much focused on the fact that he is, you know, Tunisian, like he, it, but it's a role in which, like, you're rooting for someone who is of, who is Arab, who is, you know, of Swana. And so I just thought about that, and I'm like, this is like one of the few times I can think of, especially in recent years, you know, where it's like mainstream and it's on a mainstream platform, and it's someone that you're, because throughout the film, like, you're actively rooting for him and like.
But Jackie, can I? I think this is actually what I was talking about, that I think is in some ways more powerful, because you're rooting for him as part of a team that has nothing to do with his identity, and as you know, those are the types of things that Americans watch, you know, mm-hmm. like they watch this kind of a movie, and it's the, you know, God, Braveheart's such an old, but like everybody all of a sudden after watching Braveheart was like, yeah, Scottish freedom. You know, I mean, like, we all just kind of got this like, oh yeah, we're all on board. And I think as we just start like feeding these reasons for Americans to cheer for, you know, Swana folks and mm-hmm. Arabs and Muslims without even realizing it, mm-hmm. I think that's when they start realizing, oh gosh, you know, they're just like us. You know, they have the same wants and desires and fears. And, you know, so I love that example. I haven't seen the movie, but I love that example because I think that's so important.
Yeah. I would be curious what you would think. Yeah. You would think about that, just the film in general, like, yeah, because it is one of those, like, yeah, this is like one of those, it's a blockbuster and, like, you know, easy to follow along with, and you know, it's
Charlize was in
I
did want to say one other thing, just back to the sort of narrative shift, sea change. I mean, and I think I mentioned this last time, like, again, 30, 40 years ago, Vanessa Redgrave got booed off the stage for speaking about mm-hmm. Palestine. Mm-hmm. Now you've got Mark Ruffalo, Javier Bardem, Emma Stone, Yorgos Lanthimos, you know, Ava DuVernay. You've got all of these, like, big names that are, like, willing to stand up and say, to some degree, mm-hmm. no more. Right. And, you know, I'm not really a fan of, like, celebrities saving us. But I do think it's an indication of really where we're at, that these people who are too big to cancel are speaking up, and they're comfortable speaking up. I mean, Javier is wearing a keffiyeh to the Oscars, like, you know, I mean, like, I think that it says a lot. Again, I'm not relying on them to be the, you know, the vanguard of this, but I think it's just, it really signals where we're at.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mona, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I think really amazing points are being brought up. And I can't, so I made my little list here. I really wanted to have sort of a concise list of, like, okay, what are, like, go-to films or positive, you know, representations out there that, whether newer or older, what have you. Mm-hmm. Jackie definitely mentioned already the list from, like, what's on Watermelon Plus to, I said yes to the Battle of Algiers because, you know, the topic of today is decolonizing our consumption. Mm-hmm. Well, that movie is pretty much as decolonial as it can get if you're really, you know, if you're really about that type of point of view and education. And the Battle of Algiers is not a film that I think the average American may not know about it,
right,
but it is a classic and wonderful, you know, like, it's undeniable and it's not going anywhere. Like, it's, I think it's going to stand the test of time. Mm-hmm. And there is, you know, there's something to be said about that. So it's, there's, I don't know, two things can be true at the same time. Mm-hmm. Me personally, I'm not really a big fan, and nor do I really care that much about the Western gaze. Absolutely. We need more mainstream films to, you know, cut the funding and the BS, and, you know, as far as just because it's making you more money, that doesn't make it okay to continuously, you know, use racist tropes and mm-hmm. negative tropes and all of these things towards our people, which again continues to cause harm. And as Sapa was talking about, you know, specifically saying that you're Palestinian, right? Mm-hmm. And that like triggered something in me because, yeah, our whole life, we, you know, before October 7th happened, it was always, oh, you're from, oh, that's Israel. Like, we wear Palestine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm wearing my Palestine necklace. And people would point at it mm-hmm. when I'd be at the mall when I was younger and be like, oh, Israel, you know, oh, that's where I'm from. And I'm like, no, 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 that's not where you're from. And it's not called that. So, you know, these things, if we're talking about representation, it does start there about correcting people and not being afraid to say these things. And I think where the shift is happening is I thought of this, there's a book called, a kid's book called I Am From Palestine, and the author made with a, you know, an illustrator, they made a short film, it's on YouTube for free, called I Am From Palestine. Beautiful, you know, beautiful, adorable kids short film. And it's specifically about that topic, about this little girl going to school and, you know, her identity and where she's from being completely erased, and the teacher not realizing or knowing much about this, and, you know, her going home and speaking to her dad about it, and him kind of helping her navigate that so that she feels pride in mm-hmm. where she comes from, that she's not like this confused, mm-hmm. you know, like, well, everyone else knows where they're from, and how come when it comes to us, it's always a question? It's mm-hmm. always a question. And how is it that these other folks are telling me who or where mm-hmm. I'm supposed to be, you know, where we're supposed to be from, or where my family's from? Like, it's just this continuous thing. So to even have something like that exist is a big deal. It is a big deal. It's a big deal for our kids. It's a big deal for our young adults. It makes a difference. And quickly, I did want to touch on, I just wanted to mention also, speaking of representation, I wanted to mention like actresses and writers and directors such as Shireen Dabis, who, she's the one who created the movie, the most recent movie, All That's Left of You, which is now playing, you know, across theaters, certain theaters, and at various Palestine and Arab film festivals. It's getting rave reviews. Also they tried to shoot in Palestine. I think they got some footage in Palestine, but most of it was shot in Jordan because it's very difficult to do that. But again, a film based on this intergenerational family and Palestine mm-hmm. and everything they go through. She's also known for a film called America, which is again about this first generation family. Again, like another film that, although maybe not as known, is still very important and, you know, does at least show this family who's new to the country and the things that they go through to, you know, to make a new home here. She was in Mo. I think she had written part of that, some of the episodes there. She played his sister on that show. She's great. She's been in a bunch of different things. And at least we have, you know, people like her. We have Anne-Marie Jassid, who wrote and directed Palestine 36, which is also being played right now. And she also wrote and directed Salt of the Sea, another very important film starring Suher Hamad. If anyone doesn't know who Suher Hamad is, they should know her. She's like a prominent Palestinian poet from New York City. She got her debut on like HBO Deaf Poetry back in like 2000, right after 9/11 was her debut. And that was her main acting role. So again, these specifically female artists, mm-hmm. Palestinian artists that are telling their stories, or a form of storytelling that is still relevant to our people. And I'll just mention really quickly, Jackie Reem Saloom. She is also another writer-director. She has done short documentaries of Arab-American stories on PBS. She did a short documentary called Planet of the Arabs, which is very much connected to Jack Shaheen's Real Bad Arabs. And she's done one of my favorite documentaries when I was younger called Slingshot Hip Hop, which is about hip hop artists and young rappers in the West Bank who are trying to perform and you know, get a chance at performing for their people. She's done music, the group Dem, who is a main hip, you know, hip hop Palestinian group, is also in the documentary, and she's worked with them and has directed some of their music videos as well. And lastly, I'll mention, you gotta do your research.
We will have this in the show
notes.
There's
more
for everyone.
lastly, I'll just mention Nadine, Labeki. I think it's Labeki. Am I saying it right?
Labeki.
Yeah. And I remember watching her film Caramel, which is about a woman who, I think she works in a salon. It's been a long time since I've seen this film, but it was a great, you know, sort of comedy film about this woman trying to, like she's a hustler and she has to deal with like certain things, personal things, while she's working in the salon. And she's also done more recent films, also based in Lebanon. So there you go. There's just like, that's my little list right there. I really wanted to get that out because we out here and they out here, we exist. No matter what they say, we just have to like dig a little deeper sometimes. That's all.
I was gonna say, when you specifically said not Palestinian but Arab women, I was like, oh, that's a whole other angle to this. Is that a huge stereotype in the West is the Orientalist kind of archetype of a Arab woman that's like very submissive, oppressed, etc. And in the Encampments film, in so many of these films, in our culture, you see how much Arab women, speaking for myself, Palestinian women, carry the spirit of the resistance and are actually like the backbone of our households and the backbone of our cultures. And that's like a whole other tangent I could go on. But the idea of how Western feminism really leaves out Arab women is like a whole other thing, and that so much, very much so, plays into representation and how that's depicted. And I also wanted to say, in what you said, actually in what everyone said, but the idea of having representation of Arabs that's not centered around their identity, I think really starts with us in our everyday lives, because living in the U.S., what people see us as is usually not our identity first. It's usually like, oh, you're my nurse. Oh, you're my, you're a student. Oh, you're my whatever. And then once they come to know this side of us, then that's when the stereotypes come out. And then that's when the unlearning really happens. And I think that's like, media is just a bigger version of that on a larger scale. But I think what we do in our everyday lives, and sometimes it can feel like this isn't my responsibility, right? But part of it is how we act as well.
On a lighter note, it just reminded me, like, when we all held up our Palestine necklace, but it's funny because in the Arab community, it's very common for, like, you know when someone's Palestinian because the first thing they'll tell you is, I'm Palestinian, instead of being like, I'm a student, I'm majoring in this, like, I'm Palestinian. Hi, my name is Safa, and you continue on. But that just was funny.
Especially the Encampments movie, the amount of women on that screen who were whole, I was like, yes, thank you.
Voice of Hind Rajab was also the director is a Tunisian woman. I love her.
Listen, whenever you want to come back to the podcast and get into specifically, you know, just talking about women like in the movement and everything, because when we like, you know, when we were talking about that, and we were like thinking like through different films and TV shows that we could reference, right? We were talking about Rami and Mo, and you're like, yeah, but also like, there needs to be more women. Like, we need to be focused on the women.
Yeah, that's a whole other podcast, too. But
And there's so much literature, too. Like, I read more than I watch things, to be honest. So there's a lot of, like, really powerful Arab and Arab-American authors as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I can talk all day with y'all. I did want to ask a couple more questions before we wrap. Munir, I wanted to ask you this
question, you know, especially given like your expertise in many roles and everything, you know, within filmmaking, for any filmmakers, right, who are working on projects that are taking back these narratives, and just creating like really cool and amazing stories, you know, do you have any words of encouragement, you know, for them as far as like building an audience, especially in a time where we're seeing like a lot of suppression? You have any thoughts?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that we're in such an exciting moment, especially for our community. And, you know, you guys were talking about that Black Panther moment, that Crazy Rich Asians moment. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like our community has quite had that yet. So that is still up for grabs. And I think that's an amazing goal for the directors, creatives in our community to chase after. Because when it comes, I know that it's going to be a really exciting moment. And I hope that we're a part of it in some way.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, what would you offer, I guess, like, to anyone who's, like, creating all of these? Like, I know you had mentioned, like, being in an exciting time and kind of, like using that, you know, to springboard. But as far as just, like, I guess, you know, if someone's, like, listening to this and they're sitting, like, on a story and they're wanting to, again, like, I know for, like, our films, like, we're always looking for ways in which to build an audience. But for anyone who is wanting to do that, especially where it concerns, again, representation, however you define that, right? Like, what would you offer to them as advice for, like, again, building audience, building momentum around these stories?
Yeah. I mean, all the great artists of our time started with that same urge, that same desire, and without anything. There was a point where all of them had no experience, no relationships, no connections. So I think take the craft seriously. You know, that's what I would say. Commit to it in a meaningful way. It's not, you know, it's not a hobby. It's not a side passion. If you want to really, you know, move this, if you want to move culture, if you want to move our representation forward, then we need people who are taking this as seriously as you would take the law, medicine, accounting, any other profession that you commit yourself to, you know? And when the time comes, we're here for you.
Ryan, I'll ask the same thing of you and for any actors, you know, who want to work on projects. What is the advice that you would give to them?
Oh, man. I mean, honestly, Munir really said it best. Like, it's, you know, take it as seriously as you do being a doctor or a lawyer. You know, get in class, work with your friends, create content. I hate the word content. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that.
I know.
But, you know, I mean, create sketches, like write. You know, there are a lot of us that write. I don't consider myself a writer, but I write just because it's something to do in the meantime to exercise that creative output. But I mean, honestly, like get in community with other creatives, like-minded creatives. There are a lot of people in this town who want to make things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, honestly, like, it's sort of that old adage, like, I don't even remember it, so I'm not even going to say it, but, you know, like, success, whatever, luck, preparedness, success, mm-hmm. whatever that thing is, like, be ready for when your chance comes, you know? Mm-hmm. And if you're an actor, if acting is your thing, like, sitting around and waiting for it to happen isn't... Unfortunately, we don't live in the 1950s or 40s where, you know, it's a very different world right now. And so you need to be, like, creating your own stuff, even if it's, like, little plays with your community. Like, mm-hmm. just keep moving. Because we need your voices, you know? I mean, like, I'm in a class right now, and honestly, like, my class is almost entirely people of color, and it's wonderful. Everybody brings their own authentic experience to class, and it's super great, and it's invigorating, and every time I leave, I'm just I'm pumped to go home and write and create and, you know, so be in community. I think be in community, create, take it seriously. Yeah, that's it.
Nice. Yeah. Thank you so much. Anyone want to share anything that you didn't already get to share before we wrap up? Amira, I'll start with you.
All good.
Anyone else that you didn't get to share before? Would you just like to say?
I love that you called Amira out, though.
Like, we haven't heard from her in a while, but I know that she's also been soaking up everything that y'all have been saying.
Yeah,
so
exactly. Yeah.
I was just going to say thank you for doing this. Thank you for having us on. Even the fact that this exists and like someone wanted to make a podcast about Arab representation is awesome. I think genuinely things are changing. I think our, like Safa even mentioned, like my parents, how they react to being proud about who you are, being loud about being Arab, being loud about being Muslim, all of that came because we kind of pushed them to do that. But that was not, it was not in my parents' generation's mindset at all. And I'm really happy that this is changing and we're taking this on.
Thank you so much. For sure.
Yeah, that is something I'll say. That is something I just expressed on Threads to Jackie of just, I knew from the conversations I had beforehand that Jackie wasn't ignorant to this, but when I started meeting with her, it was just like, oh wow, like she is so ready to do this, and having the whole series planned out, making sure that, you know, we started
PhD to be quite honest.
Making sure that we started with, you know, the introduction with Orientalism, talking through all the terms, Swana versus Mina and stuff like that. It wasn't just like a I don't really know about you guys. You would have come on the podcast and like tell me what's happening. You really set the groundwork. And so it's just been definitely this has been the highlight of my Arab American Heritage Month.
Thank you.
Ditto.
Yes. Y'all are all invited back to the podcast to talk about whatever. Oh my gosh. The other question. I keep saying that before we wrap. I swear this is like the second to last question.
Second to last.
Going on like close to an hour and a half. It's fine. No, because it's the last episode and we're going to talk about like more positive stuff. So I did want to ask this because I heard it in the last episode. And Ryan, when you're talking about representation and, you know, what that means to you and everything, you also mentioned, I believe you said, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but you said that you were a big, as far as like what you really gravitate towards, like storyline wise, like you really like fantasy and adventure.
Oh yeah. I'm a big nerd. Yeah.
Okay. I just want to know, what is your dream role?
Oh God. You know, I don't know if this is the dream role, but I really want to play a pirate.
God.
I don't know if that's like the dream role, but like I've always wanted to play a pirate. I feel like I'm swarthy enough, like I should get to do it.
Talking like Johnny Depp type of pirate or Hook?
Right, like, that's what I was, like Jack Sparrow.
Sure. Yeah. Or like Black Sails or like I don't know, just like yeah. I mean, I honestly like I was really like this show that was out for a bit that was called Wheel of Time. It's like my favorite, my favorite fantasy book series. They're making an animated series now, I think, which is super exciting. But like, I would have loved to have done something like that or be part of Lord of the Rings in some way, or just like, I don't know, like that stuff to me is just like, yeah. You know, it's fun to go play a lawyer on whatever, but like, if I can like swing on a rope and chop someone's head off, like, you know, fulfill stereotypes or anything.
Ryan, I did want to ask you, are you the class that you mentioned? Is it a writing class? What are you taking?
No, an acting class.
An acting. Okay. Cause I want to say you can work on that script now. In some capacity, but also consider, I don't know, this is just a throw out there, because we, for all of the artists out there, especially I mean, I know Munir does teach. Have you ever considered teaching acting or anything in that realm at all?
I'm not a teacher.
No.
I'm really not. I don't know. Maybe at some point, but like I'm not. Maybe I'm too selfish to be a teacher. I don't know. Listen, I have great, like, abundant respect for my teachers. I think there is a quality in a good teacher that I just don't think I have.
I'm just going off of the last. You gave teacher-ish, but like fun teacher, yeah. The fun teacher. Like
I so. Make a good uncle.
Never mind.
You'll be a guest speaker for a class. You just don't want to plan out all the curriculum, right?
I just you know like my. My acting teacher right now, I think the world of him and his level of interest and focus. And I don't know, it's just like there's a quality in him that I just like, I admire so much that I don't find that I have. I could do like a little seminar though. I'll do like a show. You're right, Amira, like guest lecture, I think is where I want to find myself.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in the meantime, Munira, if you know of any filmmakers who are working on like pirate-esque things.
Noted, absolutely.
Connect. Yeah, definitely connect.
Yeah, yeah, make it happen.
on that note, I really appreciate each and every one of you for being on the podcast. And I meant it when I said that you're always invited back to talk about films, the film industry, whatever it is that you are wanting to talk about. Like, yeah, we're welcome back on the podcast. Where can folks find you and how can they support you? Safa, I'll start with you.
You can support me by continuing to do stuff like this and talk and have discussions. I'm big on like, it's very important to be talking with your friends, talking with your families, talking with people you know, talking at people at work about stuff like this, because that's where conversations start. Our Instagram, sjp.ur, of course, always go and support that. I think conversations is where everything starts. So having those and being willing to listen.
Sana?
Definitely the SJP Instagram. Definitely End Apartheid Rock as well. Instagram, that's where like a lot of Palestine organizing in Rochester happens, and we're both a part of that as well. I think that's pretty much it. And like Supple said, yeah, definitely keep talking about things.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. Luna.
So again, you can find, I'm on Instagram, MNNajib7. So you can follow me on there. Email is mntaha@gmail.com. And thank you so much, Jackie. I think just continuing, to have the space and the resources and the time to continue these discussions for education purposes, but also obviously, we've needed this. We've really needed this. And Jackie, the first time she invited me, we were talking about No Other Land. And I was, I was nervous to do that one. I'd never done a podcast before, but, that's kind of how it started and more conversations started. And since then, we really have just like been continuing to try to figure out, it just so happened like this month arrived, and it's wonderful that she was able to connect with the people that she's connected with and help us put this together. So inshallah, until next time, it's been great.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, of course. Absolutely. Amira.
Yes, you can find me on Threads primarily is where I'm most active at Amira Out Loud, but I also post monthly on my Substack. If you didn't hear enough of me waffling on here, I am, slightly more thoughtful, I guess, because you can edit the Substack. So go hear me be very smart on there. But and then inshallah, like we said, back on here soon.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, no, feel free to again, go to her Substack, but then also on Threads. She is an absolute menace on Threads, and we support it. Yes, she, well, yeah, Ryan's laughing because he's also that on Threads. It's fantastic. Speaking of which, Ryan, where can folks follow you and support you?
Socials. I'm Ryan Schreim on all of my socials. Yeah. Other than that, like I said last time, cast me as a pirate. That's how you can most support my dreams.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And Munir, how can we follow and or find you and support you?
Thank you. Yeah, follow at Watermelon Pictures on Instagram and subscribe to Watermelon Plus. You'll see the work that I do.
Oh, cool. Fantastic. Yes, absolutely. Again, cannot stress enough how grateful I am to have all of you joining us on the podcast tonight. Listeners, we'll have information about where you can follow and support them in the show notes or in the description below. Of course, if you're watching on YouTube, wherever you're listening from, make sure you hit that subscribe button. And if you like tonight's episode, please give us a 5-star rating. Share this episode and leave a comment to let us know what you liked the most. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, all the things. Visit ourvoicesproject.com and sign up for our newsletter for more information about what we do. Again, if you haven't listened to our previous episodes in the series, we highly recommend that you do so. Not only that, but do yourselves a favor and then go watch Real, that's R-E-E-L, Bad Arabs, available for free on YouTube, as well as the films and TV shows that our guests recommended tonight. We're going to be taking 3 weeks off, and we'll be back on May 21st to dive back into films that center Black, Brown, Indigenous voices and stories. One more parting word of advice from your friendly neighborhood filmmaker and film fan. Just because Arab American Heritage Month is wrapping up doesn't mean that you stop advocating for the kind of representation that shows the whole of their humanity. Always be critical of the kind of media that you're consuming and who it's suggesting that you vilify. Hollywood likes to tell on itself every time. And so it's our job as moviegoers to turn the tide on the narratives that, you know, we've been told for so long and instead support the real stories from Arab communities. When you're advocating, always center the people that you're advocating for. You can do this by subscribing to Watermelon Plus. It's $7.99 a month or $79.99 a year. They are not paying me to say this. Munir can vouch for me. Go and find and watch episodes, I believe, of Sam and Cat, so Ryan can get those royalties. Mm-hmm. And also, yes, if you're a filmmaker watching, cast him as a pirate, please. And thank you. If you're, and then also too, especially for our student activists, they are receiving so much backlash for the encampments, for everything that they've been doing in protesting for Palestine, for speaking up for Palestine. And they need your support as a community member now more than ever. So it's really important that if you have a Students for Justice in Palestine, or for any of the groups, right, that are being targeted, students that are being targeted right now, to go and support them. Like I said before, we'll have links in the show notes, in the description below, of course, if you're watching on YouTube, about how you can do that. And they're doing really important work on their campuses. And like I said, our students need all the help that they can get. Make sure you go follow Amira, as she said, on Substack and Threads, and go get that knowledge, especially when it concerns anti-SWANA and anti-Arab discrimination. If you're looking for a writer or a public speaker, contact Muna. Her info is also in the show notes. But whatever you do, continue to uplift the stories, the multifaceted stories, especially when they're coming directly from Arabs. This has been Jackie McGriff, your host for tonight's episode of Representation in Cinema. And as always, thank you for listening.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.
Producer note, my favorite part is when Ryan shoots down every idea that everybody has about everything except for being a pirate or being in a fantasy movie. It's the best!